Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
Now you're very welcome along. We are joined by Matt Williams, former Scotland, Leinster and Ulster coach. Hello, Matt.
Good day, Joe. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very well. Fiona Hayes, former Irish international, is with us as well. Hello.
Hi, Joe. How are you getting on?
Very well. You survived your MMA ordeal, I hope.
Just about. Still have a few bruises, but I survived anyway.
Matt, don't ask, but don't mess with her.
We've had our chats, so I'm staying on this side of the fence.
Okay. Well, look, 2002 was the last time New Zealand, Australia and South Africa all beaten on the same day. And what's rare is wonderful because they were brilliant games in their own right. France, irresistible in Paris, 40 points to 25 against New Zealand. That is a first French win against New Zealand since 2009. And then for England, a Twickenham Marcus Smith, who's settling into the role, kicked a last-minute penalty for the win against the South Africans. England 27, South Africa 26. Also, just a point in it, in Cardiff, Wales 29, Australia 28. Rhys Priestland in the last minute there for Wales. Elsewhere on the Saturday, the Irish women beat Japan 15 points to 12 at the RDS. And then yesterday, the Irish men beat Argentina 53 points to 7. So for Andy Farrell, it has been a very positive November series. He was reflecting on that yesterday and about what pleased him most.
I think the most pleasing thing of the reason why he was great to end in that way is that we grew as a group. You know, there's a lot of lads got some well deserved game time. There's a bit of controversy that went. That we had to deal with throughout the morning and right up until kick-off, and we dealt with it pretty well. So pretty pleasing. Jack Cornan, he just felt a little bit of something in his quad yesterday, and we gave him till this morning to see how he would wake up, and we thought he'd be okay, but he wasn't. We didn't even get to the warm-up, obviously, with him. So 7:45 this morning, Nick Timoney got a call to come back down from Belfast, and it just shows the strength of the group, and it's exactly what we talked about in there. It shows the strength of the group that he's covering 6, 7 and 8, you know, and can do it seamlessly. You know, for all the mix-up this morning, Tig Byrne was covering second row, and then all of a sudden he's covering 6, 7 and 8, and then he's back into second row again, and he plays a match like that. Pete comes off the bench to play the full game and end up captaining the side as a stormer. So I think the most pleasing part about the month really that we've been together is the cohesion as a group and going forward as a group.
Yeah, Andy Farrell there. He'll go off and have a very pleasant Christmas, I suspect. Job well done for him. We'll come to Ireland in a moment, Matt, but let's start with the Southern Hemisphere teams. They're off a long and grueling season. New Zealand's woes in particular catch the eye. Their performance in Paris?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head, Joe. I think we've got to keep this in perspective and not take anything away from any of the Northern Hemisphere teams who have been superb. The French were just magnificent on Saturday night, and was the first time since 2009 they beat New Zealand. That's the first time since 1973. They've won in Paris against New Zealand. So it's a long, long time between drinks, and they certainly made up for it. But look, all four of the Southern teams, probably to a lesser degree to the Australians, they're very, very tired campers, mate. They put in long shifts. They've been in bubbles. Like, the Argentinians haven't had a home game since before the World Cup in 2019. The bubbles they live in Australia, they're basically all in Queensland. And really, they couldn't go out to cafes. They couldn't go out to restaurants. You're in hotels. You've been in hotels for months. And anyone who's done it, you know, I certainly ended up in my time as a professional, I've struggled in hotels. I still do. I don't like going into hotels anymore. I find them very lonely, awful places, and I dodge them whenever I can because of my time in rugby. But for these guys to boom, you could just see they were sick of it. They were tired. The New Zealanders looked shattered at the end of that game. They had a look on their face that they usually put on the opposition. That should take nothing away from the Irish display or the French display. But I think we do have to keep it in perspective. I think the gap between the North and South is very small But I think I wouldn't start crying just yet. I'd think I'd keep my powder dry and let's see what happens in the summer.
Yeah, I think that's fair. On New Zealand, for instance, Fiona, they still have won 12 of 15 test matches this calendar year. They were on the road for 87 days before the game in Paris. They'd played 13 tests in 10 weeks, all the while, as Matt says, living in very strict bubbles, restricted interaction with anyone outside the squad and staff. And I don't know to what extent for you it just maybe tempers some of the excitement around Ireland's win the previous week.
Yeah, I think so a little bit. I mean, I watched the game back against France, and I mean, France were absolutely superb. They were brilliant to watch, but it wasn't the All Blacks we've been seeing in the championship in particular. They just looked tired. I suppose I was expecting to see, you know, a massive backlash from the Irish defeat, but that didn't happen. But I don't think they were physically capable of that. As Matt spoke, they're in hotels, they're in bubbles. They were coming from, you know, Aaron Smith flew out late after the birth of his child, came into the camp. It's very, very hard, I would imagine. Like Matt spoke about hotels, I was at a World Cup as well at one stage for 4 weeks, and I remember I really, really struggled for 4 weeks. So I can only imagine what it was like for those teams coming on the back of spending all their time in Australia, having to go back over to this side of the world. Then again, we definitely saw tired legs, and I think when Ireland are playing them during the summer, it's going to be a very, very different team. They're going to go back, you know, they're going to be licking their wounds, you know. Yeah, massive games for them, but they're going to be really, really disappointed. That's not how All Blacks perform. And even media are talking about Foster's job. You know, this is what's crazy to me, you know, that it comes into the media immediately because they've lost two games. These guys are just going to go home, and I think we're going to see something special next summer.
Well, who'd be a coach, Matt? New Zealand Herald poll, 18,000 votes. Just 5% felt Foster should stay on in the job. 80% want Scott Robertson to come in and replace Ian Foster. But further, so the tiredness point I fully accept, and they do look jaded emotionally, mentally, physically. I was watching John Kirwan, though, on Sky Sports New Zealand, and this was after the Irish defeat, and he was absolutely citing tiredness as an issue for sure. However, he was also talking about an intellectual stasis, maybe, and he was arguing that New Zealand really need to re-examine their thinking. He was saying, you know, 10, 12, 15 years ago, we came up with the pod system. And he was saying, what are we going to surprise the world with next? Because his argument is that New Zealand at the moment are doing nothing all that different to most of the other countries. Physically, they're not often dominating against the bigger nations. And he said, we're just relying on the skill set of individuals, often getting the ball in not great positions and saying, right, come on, come up with a bit of magic. And look, some of them do come up with magic at times. But I thought it was very interesting. He was saying, I'm glad these defeats have happened. You know, generally, we've been thought leaders. We need to get thinking.
I think very fair comments from John, who's a great thinker on the game. If you go back the last 20 years, New Zealand are the leading intellectual property makers, if you like, in the world. It used to be the Australians. It's what through the 90s, the system I was in, like it was incredibly creative system. And Australia lost that and New Zealand took it over. But what New Zealand do have, and you've hit it on the head there, Joe, again, is they are unbelievably skillful. And that goes right down through their ranks, you know, the juniors. But what we saw here was the Richie Moyongas and the Bowden Barretts, they were anonymous on the field in the last two test matches. You wouldn't have known they were there. I know Barrett got injured in New Zealand. But, you know, you see Richie Moyonga in the Super Rugby and the test matches here in Australia in the championship. These guys were cutting teams apart. And it just hasn't happened here. Whether that, and there is other thinking. So this is the other great thing that I think has happened around the world. The French are thinking differently. Ireland have changed their thinking, which I think is the most brilliant aspect of the November series for me. They have changed the way they're thinking on attack. I've been banging on about it for years, and I'm absolutely delighted in what I'm seeing there. And England have changed the way they're attacking. We've even seen the South Africans and the Australians have to adjust. That's all been created by what New Zealand have done. So I don't think New Zealand should ring the panic bells, but they do. And I love seeing the Kiwis like this. They lose two games, stock market crashes, Jacinta Ardern, their wonderful prime minister, has to come out and make statements like the whole world falling apart. They've lost two games. Like, you know, like, God save us. If I was coaching Scotland, I would give my left arm to win two games. You know? it's just New Zealanders overreacting. They've got a replacement there in Scott Robinson. But usually what the Kiwis do is wiser heads do take control. And I think, you know, anyone that writes them off now, well, that's just absolute madness, and we don't want to get into that discussion. But that's sort of typical of the way the Kiwis react. But I would say this, just to finish on it, it's their skills that have set them apart. So while I agree with John to an extent, your skill level of these players is so extraordinary that they do still turn matches.
Yeah. Fiona, on France, just conscious that we'll be going there in Six Nations time, in springtime, and things look to be pretty good. Intermac was back at 10. Roman Intermac was back at 10. There'd been an experiment where he'd played at 12, and I don't know to what extent it hadn't worked out, but certainly he was back at 10, and France just caught fire. I mean, for people who didn't see the game, I think most have seen the viral clip of Intermac running back into his own end zone and picking up the ball and, you know, doing what I think 1% of players in the country would try and do against the All Blacks, and he did it in this amazing length of the field move, which was kind of extraordinary. That was a little glimpse for people who hadn't seen the game of what France were about on Saturday. It was nuts, really.
Yeah, it was. They were just magic to watch. I mean, we talk about DuPont, you know, people were talking about Smith and DuPont coming into this game. I just thought DuPont really stood up. He was absolutely magic to watch. And I just think that himself and Intermac just have something together, and it just seems to work. When he moved to 12, that spark was lacking a little bit. And when they play together, I think they just light it up. It seems like the gods are there and things just work for them. Offloading game, everything they do seems to work. And as you said, that clip that went viral, just even watching that in the game, you're thinking, no way, he's not going to run it. Absolute confidence, no bother to him, off he went. And you know, it worked. And I think when you play teams like the All Blacks, it's stuff like that you should be trying against them, because they don't expect anyone to do that. And France were magic. But other than that, I just thought they were quite physical as well. And for me, that's something the All Blacks, I felt, have been lacking at times. Their back row haven't been anywhere to be seen in this series when they come over. And I think the French back row done a number on them as well.
Yeah.
Really, really physical.
It's so funny you mentioned that, Fiona, because some of their conversations now, I mean, I'm a sucker for going onto YouTube and watching their conversations and what they're all saying. That is their big obsession at the moment, Fiona, as well as the, well, we need to outthink opposition. They're talking about being physically outmaneuvered by opposition. It's a bit like, you know, the way we talk after World Cups, well, we're going to have to be smarter and we'll have to look to the Japans of the world. That's one of the big focuses in New Zealand at the moment, that physically they don't feel against the top teams, they are coming out on top.
Well, that's it. I mean, but they've always primed themselves. You know, you look at the likes of McCaw, you know, the back row. Anytime you ever talked about back rows in the world, it was always, there was always a Kiwi involved. And I just don't see it. I understand they're quite skillful. I'm a big Savea fan. They've been mixing and matching, but they haven't seemed to got that right, that match right. I know there's people coming in and out. You had Shannon Frizzell coming in at times, you know, like they get Papali in there, Dalton Papali. But for me, there isn't three players that are playing really well together. And I don't know if Savea is an eight for me. I think maybe a six. So they seem to be still looking at that area and they're not settled on that. And this has been going on for maybe a year, watching all their games. And it's something I'm looking at going, how did the All Blacks not have one of the most powerful back rows? And when they came over to this side of the world, it was really showing up. Ireland, absolutely, the lads absolutely blasted them off the pitch there. We were all talking about Doris van der Fleer. There wasn't even, and nobody spoke about the All Blacks back row, and it was the exact same in the game in France. I think we spoke about how tired they were, but I don't think it's clicking for them back there.
Yeah. Matt, can I ask you a stupid question?
Of course, mate.
Okay. Say we give everyone a month to go home and get a week or two on the beach and get rejuvenated and come back and play a World Cup. Who wins the World Cup?
Great questions. Not much between anyone. A fully rejuvenated New Zealand side. Gee, you know, they're the favourites for every World Cup since 1987. They've never been a World Cup where they haven't been favourites. It's just been wonderful they haven't won them all. But I think this is really tight. But the World Cup's in France. And I think France can win the World Cup. And I think it's going to be a very close World Cup. I don't think anyone's going to be able to predict it a long way out. But the planning that the French have gone into to put themselves into this position is like something out of a movie. And it started 7 or 8 years ago, maybe more, with their under 20 sides at the World Cups. They've moved these guys through. You know, even the Australian tour, last summer, the three tests against Australia. 25 of his top players he left back in France. It was only, I think there was three players on the field there the other night that toured Australia. Like they're building up their depth charts. They've got this golden generation that's coming through. He's got three or four out halves, three or four nines. Yeah, that was the number three hooker that won man of the match. You know, look, the French are really planning this.
Mm.
And you know, the other part, I think it'd be great for rugby, for France to win. It'd be great for the global game. Now, I'd love to see Ireland there.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. I would love to see Ireland win it. And I think they can. I think it's a lot going to depend on what Ireland do in the next 12 months. But we've been here with Ireland before where they've beaten New Zealand and then dropped the whole bundle out of it. So let's just keep our powder dry with Ireland. But if, right now, if I had to put money on anyone, I'd be reluctant to do it, but it'd be on France.
Mm. Fiona?
Yeah, I actually had this discussion in Mary Max after the game last night with two Leinster lads. And look, for me, you know, a lot of the time we don't back our own, but I saw an Irish bench that came onto that pitch.
Oh, no, I'm stopping you there. Don't you dare.
Joe, come on.
Don't you dare.
Come on. I saw a bench that came onto that pitch.
Get her off.
Youth that came on were just absolutely outstanding, I thought, in that game. So look, I'm going to say I think Ireland would be thereabouts. Obviously, a lot of people talking about France right now, and England are always in there. But I think we're looking good. Sorry, Joe. Well,
I'm going to blame you for starting
I've said it.
The football pod with Paddy and Andy.
I remember having the argument with Jack before, and kind of going, Jack, if this shit doesn't work, you better put me back out in the field and don't whip the big donkey out of full power.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Let's turn to then World Cup winners in waiting. They beat Argentina 53-7. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, sponsors of the Irish rugby team of us, everyone in. For Argentina, I guess the context, I mean, even Mario Ledesma's comments further to your point, Matt, earlier on. We're always talking about player welfare, mental health, and then you go 2 years without playing at home and being in a bubble all this time. I challenge any team to do that. It'd be a struggle. That's their eighth loss from 12 this calendar year. I would imagine it has been a fairly brutal year. For Ireland, it's been a great November. Three games, 19 tries. We heard Andy Farrell earlier talking about the disruption in the morning with Jack Conan out and Ian Henderson going in the warm-up as well. And James Ryan had to go off as well with a head injury, which is very unfortunate given his track record of late there. Nick Timoney, I think, got a phone call half asleep. Brian Baird promoted to the bench and came on and had that amazing break where he ran, I think, 100 metres in about 6 seconds. And Tadhg Burns' versatility there for all to see. So, Fiona, this was a different performance, obviously, to the more flowing one on Saturday against New Zealand. I mean, not least because it seemed every Irish line break resulted in an Argentina penalty at the breakdown. So it felt a bit more stop-start. What did you make of Ireland?
Yeah, I thought the first 20 minutes was definitely stop-starty. I think once everyone got in there, I think I really, really enjoyed the game after the first 20 minutes. I think the set piece was on point. Tadhg Burns dominated at the breakdown. I mean, we spoke Argentina, they were tired. There was misthrows in the line out and everything. But for me, the big thing with Ireland, and I was saying it earlier, was the young guys that came on. I mean, people are giving out about Conor Murray's speed of the game. You know, there was a few sighs in the crowd when there was box kicking. I thought he had quite a good game, but when we saw Casey came up, he just brought that speed again. Dan Sheehan, Ryan Baird, that 50-metre run was outstanding. And it was just exciting. It was exciting rugby. They were on top. Guys were trying it. Everything we've discussed about their attacking style, they stuck to that as well. We still saw the multiple playmakers. There was less stress on Joey Carberry. Another great performance in the bank for him. You have people standing up, taking control. It's not all pressure on our 10. Mm. Johnny wasn't there. He was injured. And Carberry gets a man of the match performance. That's the kind of stuff we want to be seeing from this window. And it's really exciting to see that.
Matt, sorry to pick out a potential negative here, but Fiona's point on Conor Murray and the upping of the tempo with Casey, that's an ongoing conversation at the moment. Jameson Gibson-Park seems to be in pole position. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, it's how do you speak badly of one of Ireland's greatest ever players, which is Conor. But look, there's no doubt the game changes in pace. I think we put it in perspective. I felt that the game against Argentina was always going to be a stop-start affair because no one could hold the intensity they had against New Zealand and repeat it 7 days later. You know, you just, it's just very, very rare. You see, that's why you see great semi-finals at the World Cup, and the final quite often is a dud. You know, you can't keep that emotional high. But I did think the pace was poor. It's probably another topic, Joe, but one thing that came out in November is we are so beholden to the referees and the officiating. If the officials can let a game go, get a game moving, the players are trying to be really positive. Everyone across the globe is trying to be positive, but it's the laws and the officials that are stopping it. The Australians had three in a row. Like, they had three absolute stinkers in a row. They want to play a positive game, they couldn't. And I felt, again, if Ireland want to play this game, this high tempo, high pace, high skill game, which I completely support and I want them to play, they need a referee that's going to allow them to do it. And Connor might have to adjust a little bit. I do think he's slow. He's definitely slower on his tempo than the other players. The plus, and for me, was seeing those young guys get a go. Exactly what Fiona said. Like, the injuries were actually a blessing in disguise. Like, I didn't think, did we really need Pete O'Mahony to play that game? We know he's a great player. But I would have liked to have seen some other guys come in. Did we really need Robbie Henshaw to come back in that game? He could have come back through Leinster. What an opportunity to throw some others in. That's probably the only negative. I would have liked to see some more young guys.
What do you think is Andy Farrell's thinking in picking some of those players he knows inside out and proven players? What's his thinking in doubling down on them this month?
Well, you can't just throw... There's no point throwing, you know, 23 young guys out there because they'll fail. You do need older heads around to guide them through. I just think, again, if you look at what France did against Australia in the summer, they took the chance in a meaningful game. Like, it's not just putting guys in against Georgia or if you've got to play Uruguay or something. These guys need meaningful games to develop. They need to get up around that 20 cap mark by the time we get there. Get Ryan Baird coming in was a blessing. Like, I would have loved to have seen Coombs in there. I really rate Coombs. It was great to see Casey come off the bench. Why didn't we start him? Why don't we give him the hour and give Connor the 20? Mm. But Connor's a lion. He doesn't need it. Peter O'May, same thing. He doesn't need it. Pete's got, I don't know how many caps under his belt. He doesn't need it. But the coaches are cautious. It's probably the aren't. And I'm being picky because I think the coaches have done a really, really good job and I don't want to run them down. But I just think, again, it's another opportunity. It might have been a bit of an opportunity missed. But the young, and there's the other one, the young guys that turned up, as Fiona said, they were brilliant. They're absolutely magnificent.
Yeah. He's used 52 players across the calendar year, actually, Andy Farrell. We marvel when Leinster do that, but he has used 52. I do take your point about meaningful games against proper opposition, but 52 is not a bad innings. Harry Byrne came on as well. What did you make of the two out halves, Matt?
A bit disappointed with Harry, hate to say it. I rate him, but I would have liked to see him be a bit more accurate when he came on. He was a little inaccurate with his kicks in general play and his passing at times. He was probably nervous, poor kid, you know, but hopefully he'll settle down. That's what I mean. You need time out there where you feel a bit comfortable. And I thought Joey looked the best I've seen him since he had his string of injuries. I think he's been really nervous at Munster. He looked like he's forcing his game a bit. And that's just time in the saddle. You need to get out there and play and just relax and say, well, just let the natural juices flow. And he was forcing his game a little bit, I felt. And I thought that was really good for him the other day. He just looked a lot more. I think those kicks against New Zealand would have done him the world of good, would have done his confidence the world of good. And he looked like he got a little bit of his confidence back, which must have been lagging a bit. That's because of his injuries, because of how much time he's had away. Mm. I think, all in all, I'd like to see Byrne given a little bit more time. He needs it. But, you know, Sexton's still the king, isn't he? Like, unbelievable at his age. He is still one of the best in the world. Still talking as much as he always does, giving lip to the Kiwis.
Oh, yeah, he's really mellowed. Really mellowed, hasn't he?
he was giving it the whole time. I was just loving it. Because the Kiwis hate that. You know, they just can't. They want you to get down on a bended knee and say, oh, yes, Mr. All Black, thank you very much. You know, and Johnny's just, get back your own side, you mug. What are you talking about? No, and he's talking behind the referee's back. And you can see Whitelock was just hating it. And that's his job. His job's to win the game. And, you know, he's an aggressive, demanding alpha, and he gets out there and proves it. And he backs it up with his play at his age. It's very extraordinary.
Yeah. So, Fiona, I think people are massively encouraged by Ireland with the ball. Like, there's been this massive improvement over the past month. And the other thing which has everybody excited is the Irish pack. I mean, yeah. Matt mentioned Coombs and Ryan Baird can't get into the matchday squad at the moment. And you look at Caelan Dorris, man of the match against New Zealand, his try yesterday, two-man tackle, and he seems to bulldoze into them. Van der Fleer, he was told to go and improve his carrying. Boy, has he. I mean, he's a player transformed. Kelleher at one point pops up in the left wing and throws one-handed pass, and you know, he's been a revelation as well. That's not to mention, you know, the two second rows doing their thing and so much competition in the back row. Peter O'Mahony said he's enjoyed this month, Peter O'Mahony, more than any other month across his Irish career, and he's playing like it. And that is not to mention the best tight head prop in the world. So this pack is bloody exciting right now.
Oh, so exciting. That front row in particular, I'm loving. We didn't know at the start of the series, like who was our hooker, who's going to be our starting hooker. And I think he's just put his hand up, Keller has put his hand up. He's so dynamic across the park. We talked about maybe inconsistency in line out throwing. Didn't happen. I thought he was really, really good in the Argentinian game in particular. He was everywhere. He was just hungry to carry. And I think that's the thing. They've been given almost this license to be playmakers, to carry hard, to get involved in the back line. There's not very much dummy running. If there's a guy out there front row or not, he's able to pop that pass and he's able to take part in that back line attack. And I think that's what's really exciting for me. You know, back in the old school days, I suppose you were always told go behind their back, get them out of the way. But now we see him being involved, and the skill set, Tadhg Furlong, I mean, he just is amazing to watch. Every time I watch him on the pitch, I absolutely love it. Scrum time does the business, not a bother to him. And then straight out there, you're seeing little cheeky offloads and everything, pushing lads back with his hand. He's definitely the best prop in the world at the minute.
Yeah, I think the heart swells watching Tadhg Furlong. Everybody kind of just warms to him because such a great person as well off the field. Like, Matt, I mean, it's just bloody exciting watching them go about their business and the way they've been encouraged to do it as well. You can hear the crowd. The crowd are so on board with this new style and loving it when a forward's getting involved in the mix.
Joe, you've heard me say this before, but I just believe that the way the national team play has to reflect the national character. And when teams take on the character of their nation in the way they play a game of rugby, it brings another force into it. You could see the French the other day. You know, what Endemac did, who runs the ball from behind their try line against New Zealand? Well, the French do. And they used to do it. And they're doing it again. And look what happened. Mm. And he backed it up with skill. And, you know, to me, the Irish character is a creative, it's joyous, it's got a sense of humour, it's fun, it wants to get involved in it. It wants to have joy. You know, we used to go to the old Lansdowne Road. It was the most joyful rugby ground in the world. I adored the old ground. And the Aviva is also wonderful. But when we're not playing in a way that brings the crowd in, I think it's a negative. And this style of rugby suits Ireland, suits the skill set, and the provinces are all playing a positive game set as well. So a national philosophy comes from the ground up. It's not forced from the national team down. It comes from the schools, into the juniors and schools, into the AIL clubs, and then comes up into the provinces and into the national team. Mm. And these guys are playing like that. And it works. It's just beating New Zealand, beating the best team in the world. Everyone's adoring it. It's so positive. And we'll see Leinster and Munster and Ulster and Connacht try and play a brand of it in the next coming weeks. And that's what a national philosophy should be. It shouldn't be a disconnect between the national team and the others. I just can't speak highly enough of Andy Farrell for having the courage to change.
Yeah, no, I'm delighted for him because he
takes a lot of courage to say what I've been doing is wrong or what we've been doing is wrong.
Yeah.
I'm going to change. And look at the benefits. He deserves a lot of credit.
He does. He never bristled when he was getting lots of criticism. Always very courteous in his public dealings and held his head. And so you would be very happy for him. Gary Keegan's getting lots of credit as well, it seems. One last point from this game before we leave it behind us. Argentina discipline was an issue, not least the Thomas Lavanini red card, 7 yellows, and now this is his 3rd red card for Argentina. And I mean, if you ever wanted to be made feel ashamed for your actions, just pray you don't do anything too bad when Peter O'Mahony's there to see you do it. Have a listen to this.
He knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, Peter O'Mahony.
Oh, yeah, hard man.
Up and away.
Man yourself.
Up and away.
Hard man turn. Well done. Unlike you, isn't it? That's very unlike you.
Well, I mean, it's always worse than the red card. I mean, geez, look, his record's fairly appalling. Had to be read. I don't really know what you can say about it, Fiona.
I know, like, and I watched it back after I was at the game, but when I came home, then I had a look at it, and it was terrible. There was no control. He just flung himself at Healy. Now, to be fair, obviously he shook his hand going off, and Healy went over to him, and they had a handshake. And you know, in the heat of moments of the battle, these things happen. But it's constantly happened to Lavanini. It's their discipline throughout the whole game was absolutely terrible. And I think that's a knock-on effect of tiredness at times. But definitely with him, I've seen it so many times in the past. It's almost, I don't know, it's almost like an inner anger that came out. And you know, Peter came out after the game, I suppose. And he said himself, it is a matter of margins. And myself and Matt were talking about this beforehand. You know, It can be centimetres. It can be something tiny. But that in particular isn't that. That was foul play. That was him directly going to his head. That was intentional. And that's the problem.
It was interesting as well, Matt, even in the referee discussions, they were trying to establish to what extent it was contact with the head. But the referee and the TMO were even saying, well, do you know what? It's actually so reckless and so unnecessary. Actually, head contact may be almost just a non-issue here. It was that unnecessary an effort on a player nowhere in Keane Healy, player nowhere near the ball.
Yeah, it's exactly what Fiona said. I just watched it and just went, oh, you're kidding me. Like, you know, the thing with that is not only has he conducted some foul play and could have really hurt someone, he's let his team down, he's let his nation down, and he let the game down, he let rugby down. Like, that's just not what national players should be doing. Now, you compare that to what happened over in Carter for the Australian boys. Beard was carrying up and Valentini came up, missed time, they had a head clash. And he got sent off for a head clash, which was, you know, it was quite crazy. But that's what Fiona and I was talking about there. A head clash that gets a red card. Well, that's messy. He got it wrong by a couple of centimetres. What we saw at the Aviva was simply foul play. And that there's no place in the game for it to go. But I really feel for Ledesma. He's a very good man and a very good coach. He coached in here in Australia for a number of years, and he's a very, very good coach, and I've got a lot of time for him. But there is an example of a team that beat New Zealand last year, and 12 months down the track or 15 months down the track, they are totally lost. They are totally lost. So we've got to be really, really careful about what this Irish team does in the next 12 months. Just beating New Zealand's not enough. They've got to build on and go. They've got the talent. If you had said to me the Argentinians would be where they are now 12 months ago, I said, no way, they'll springboard on, but they haven't. So I think it's a pretty cautionary tale for everyone in Ireland as well.
Yeah, Fiona.
Yeah.
I didn't mean it like that,
Fiona. No,
mess. I'm agreeing with you. I think Ireland would have been
chill. No, you're right. You're fair point. And to be fair, I said if the World Cup was next month. Ireland 15, Japan 12. Now, at halftime, Hannah O'Connor sent off after 27 minutes. Ireland 9 points down. This was not looking good. And if you're going to retire from international rugby at 27, you might as well do it in a bit of style. Ciara Griffin with two tries. So, I don't know. Like, does it make things a bit feel good? It certainly rescues a cloud even more so over the last couple of weeks hanging over the team. Maybe it's important for them, Fiona, just to try and generate some kind of momentum into Six Nations.
Yeah, I think so. And look, this showed heart and this showed character, okay? And that had kind of come into question in their World Cup qualifiers. You know, they talked about the camps the girls had and everything and that was put in. But sometimes people questioned, you know, when they got to game day, was that there? And these two last matches, although skill set let them down at times, both teams, I think America and Japan probably were a bit poor as well when they come over. But I just thought we saw Ireland heart, Ireland character. And there was also a couple of young girls that stood up. And I think that Greg McWilliams going into this new position he's got a blank canvas now. You know, they've shown the heart, they've shown the will, but he's got a lot to improve with them. But I think if you have that, if you have the character there, you have young players want to put their hands up, you've some back rowers coming in, some new second rowers. So it's going to be tough for this Six Nations, but I think it's about growing it now. And he's got that team, he's got to get them together. We obviously didn't have the Sevens girls involved with this last game as well, so there was a couple of changes. We got to see Enya Breen at 10. I thought she had quite a good game. At times, as I said, skill set wasn't great, but they went out and they won it and they were able to celebrate and send Keir off in style. And I think that was what the team themselves wanted to do.
Yeah, Bevan Parsons, Stacey Flood, Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe and Eve Higgins all off in sevens action in Dubai this week. And the Sevens World Cup is on in Cape Town next year. So to what extent sevens will be the focus remains to be seen. And that could be a worry for the new coach McWilliams coming in. On the skill set issue, that has been, I would say, watching the games this year, Fiona, that's the biggest bugbear. Like, you'd never watching them question commitment, heart, like trying so hard and all the camps they've committed to. And, you know, there's players on that team working on the front line. They're juggling a lot. So you kind of would always respect that. But the skill set has been, you know, each mistake in isolation, you'd say, oh, look, that happens. But I would say over the past year, it's far too routine now.
Yeah, it's exactly that. But look, as we said, we spoke about camps. I don't know what was done up there. For me, it was the skill set under pressure is what we saw in those games. Any bit of pressure that came on, things went out the window. So for me, I would be wondering, were they training at that high intense level? Mm. I spoke before how they weren't playing games. There was no matches there. So yeah, I've seen these girls. I've coached these girls. They're quite skillful. I know it's there, but now I think going into this Six Nations, I think what we need to really work at is get those skills flowing, but under pressurized situations constantly, because that's where we were letting ourselves down. People were knocking on balls, you know, and there was someone just coming up in the line. Very simple stuff. But I think when it got to match day, the girls really let themselves down around that time. At times, we saw the set piece improve in the last two games massively. So that was a big plus for me. They really tightened that up. And now it's about getting that under pressure, that skill set. Maybe it's playing a little deeper in the game line. I don't know, but they really, really need to look at that.
Could I ask you one question? Brendan Fanning's match report caught my eye yesterday in the Sunday Independent. And I just put it to you, a point he made, and you can tell me, is this an ongoing talking point in the game or not? He was talking about, it wasn't a great spectacle. Japan, on a day that required putting the ball in behind your opponents, they didn't have anyone with that toolkit. So it was phase after phase, often being buffeted by the bigger, stronger Irish women. He says, though, their set piece was woeful, the Japanese set piece, the line-out in particular. He said, this is a reoccurring feature of the women's game. At least it is with the line-out. It's an enduring mystery why they don't shift down to a size 4 ball rather than size 5, which is the same as the men's game. World Rugby say it was trialled, but it didn't win over enough support. Maybe it's worth another look. So much rugby is launched from the line-out, yet getting the ball out of the hooker's hand and close to target is a battle for many. It's common across the women's game, and some of the efforts are so far off the mark it's hard to watch. Is that fair criticism, and is the move to a size 4 something that you would advocate, or you think no?
No, I think no. I've coached one of the best hooker throwers in Ireland. Her name is Kate Sheehan. She played with Munster. She can hit any 6-4. She can hit anywhere in the park. Well able, capable, doing it. I've seen the Red Bull AIL week in, week out. The top 4 lineouts are really, really good. Okay. So it kind of depends on what you're looking for. The Irish team, Cliona Maloney, obviously is good, is really good player as well. But sometimes I think people focus on ball carrying hookers, different areas that they're looking at. They're not looking at set piece. If I'm a coach, my hooker needs to be hitting 6. We need to be nailing that lineout. And we do, and we have worked on that. So for me, I think the talent is there. Maybe not in all clubs and teams across the province, but definitely don't need a smaller ball. We just need to be working harder at it and nailing it, because it is a launch point. And we've played, you know, when I played on that team back in 2013, 2015, it was our set piece. It was our line out. Maz O'Reilly controlled everything. And that's what got us to where we were. That line out was absolutely hitting 90, 92% every game. And that's what we want.
Right, okay. Matt, I don't know how many of the games you've been able to see from over in France.
Maybe I haven't been able to see any. I've just seen the highlights.
Okay.
But, you know, I think when you have the controversy off the field, it definitely affects the players, isn't it? You know, they're human beings. And what that tends to do is you lose momentum. And it's a word that's thrown around. But, gee, when you haven't got it, you know you haven't got it. Mm. And, you know, that win might just start moving things forward. Obviously, the French women and the English women are really playing some great rugby. You know, they're giving all the sides a hiding. But if to take on any of these sides, you've got to start with some belief. And you know, just getting that win at the end might start getting the belief and get some movement forward. It's got to start somewhere, you know, but... But that off-field stuff, they've got to get that put away. You got to get that over in a box somewhere else, and so it doesn't come back and haunt you during this next Six Nations. That's got to be someone else's job, and the players have just got to focus on what their job is. Otherwise, you'll get dragged into all sorts of places you don't want to go.
Yeah. Fiona Hayes, Matt Williams, that was great. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Amir.
Thanks, Fiona.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.